The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He's Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. We're sliding into a Wednesday. Gary, how are you?
I'm doing really good because got my W-2 yesterday and IRS agents on the same day to be called back from layoff.
Great.
We'll get to that coming up here in a little bit. Really interesting, you and I talking about this in our pre-show meeting. You heard me saying, what? It was Senator Mark Warner's op-ed piece on Trump and the how Trump should be negotiating. And he comes, Senator Mark Warner is coming from the business standpoint because he said as a former governor and even before he was a former governor and senator, he was a businessman and had to strike deals. And Trump is not negotiating right, and he will tell him how to negotiate except for one thing. The first thing out of his mouth is wrong.
Yeah.
We'll get to that coming up here in just a little bit. If you're on the left, you might not want to accuse a conservative man of white privilege who is black.
Has it gone that far?
Probably not the thing to do. We'll get to that. A new U.S. bound caravan. You know, I was we were talking about this before the start of the show, and everywhere I read, but this is about Theresa May, the Prime Minister of Great Britain, the defeat in Parliament.
Yeah,
nobody has any idea what's going to happen next. And I started thinking to myself, compared to the United States, if you're somebody who thinks the United States, we're so screwed up, we've never been screwed up in the 240 years, we've never been this screwed up before. Well, the motherland.
The motherland.
Can I call it the motherland if we're going back to it? The motherland is more screwed up. Just going through every single political, financial, international trade expert that I could find on the right and left basically is saying, we have no idea what they do now.
We don't know where to go from here. Now what?
The shutdown that we have here is minor compared to what's going on in Great Britain right
now. They're trying to separate themselves from the rest of the continent. They're not debating about spending. They're trying to separate themselves from a continent.
Well, I think I've read so much. I think the one thing that really got me to laugh was I believe it was I'm doing this from memory. I believe it was the Wall Street Journal editorial on it that said, well, I mean, they could do some things. And one of the thought processes for Parliament, because now this is in the hands of Parliament, they've got to come up with something. And one of the thought processes, come up with another referendum with more questions for the people. And they're like, whoa, wait.
How many times do they want it? And it's just gone back and forth and back and forth and back and forth and back and forth.
A second referendum to basically figure out what was in the first referendum.
Yes. And to say, okay, we're sure. But what about that? Now let's do another referendum to make sure that referendum was good. Good luck. I have no idea where they go. I mean, May is done.
Well, that was an interesting thing. It said, you know, look, May may be done, but not immediately because
she's not going to quit.
I mean, and they don't want to have the vote of no confidence yet.
Right. Because head count on that right now favors her, but do you go?
But they still, even if there was a vote of no confidence, they don't even want to go down that route right now because it would just throw more chaos into a situation where it's almost as if, nobody said this, but it's almost as if, look, we need a couple of days just cooling off, period. Just to face.
No, that's what I got from it. I think they're all at a bar right now, or pub, as it may be. Right now, just sitting there. It's roughly, what, 6 o'clock in the morning? I've been there all night.
I mean, I was just, almost obsessed with just reading different analysis of it. And after about, I don't know, maybe 40, 45 minutes of reading all these different articles, my conclusion was, wow, I'm just as knowledgeable in this as any of these people. They have no idea what's going to happen either.
Well, there's and there's no way to know. And you really, if you think about it, you don't have there's likely that even if they did a vote of no confidence, that it wouldn't get there. Okay, but it's as you just said. Imagine it did. Well, then you're introducing new players. Now you have a totally different balance. Now you have a totally, because what goes on from there? What happens from that point? Who is it that's going to essentially shut down the Brexit or move it forward? I got to tell you, man, it's a mess.
It's the shutdown in the United States is peanuts compared to the situation there.
Oh, yeah.
When people say, oh, can you believe it? This government ought to control the shutdown. This shutdown's nothing compared to what's going on over there.
I mean, this is comparing a light bulb going out to a massive electrical fire. Because it's just chaos.
Well, let's even put it this way, because the disagreements that we have had with the administration, the agreements and disagreements, because it's actually been a mixed bag when it comes to trade with the administration and the president on it.
Right.
But what's going on there, even with the negotiations in China and even take the steel and aluminum tariffs and everything, it's still... Not that we don't want a solution to it, but compared to the situation in Great Britain, it's nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just nothing.
Yeah.
The shutdown compared to what's going on over there is nothing. They don't know. As you have said, remember, the decision was we're splitting from the continent. In a way, would you say it's as close to seceding, a state seceding?
Yeah,
but being in limbo because they can't figure out how to do it, and because they're not, again, it's not totally comparing apples to oranges, because you did have a legal tie-in, with the European Union,
right?
So you had a legal tie-in there, and it isn't the same. But it's because you're no state's going to secede from the union. That's not going to happen.
Right.
Okay. There's it will not happen.
But it's the same kind of tangled mess.
It would be, yes. And that's why, when you and I talked about California, just hypothetically, if they were going to secede, everything that they would have to go through.
Mm-hmm.
For example, as we talked about, they would have to take their portion of the debt. They would have to, the federal government would either have to sell the federal land, which is significant in California, back to California. How would you have that type of negotiating process? There's so much that you would have to do. Now, and this probably isn't 1/100th as complicated as that, and still it's a complete mess. And they have no idea where they're going right now. It really is pretty fascinating when you look at it.
Yeah, we've talked about all the mess and the untangling. If there were a state that ever moved to secede, which isn't going to happen, but we talked about the theoretical part of it. I said I think it would make a great television series.
Because secession.
Because you would talk about, like, in the series, you would have one, maybe two states that are leaving the country, and then what it would actually entail. Well, that's the leaving the European Union, I dare say, isn't nearly as complicated.
Right.
As what we would have here with a state seceding.
They might differ today.
Well,
in their opinion. Today, it isn't, but yeah, today but they might.
They can differ if they want, but they're drunk. So it is, but it's the same kind of complication. you have a lot of not only moving parts, you have governing bodies, and you have representatives, essentially, in Parliament and the Prime Minister, all wanting different things. And it reminds me of the 2016, you know, promise, you know, we're going to get rid of Obamacare. And then in 2017, okay, well, we really don't want to get rid of Obamacare. We're just going to get rid of the part where we have to pay a penalty if we don't buy it.
And some taxes.
And, yeah. And so you basically had this big move based on emotion, by the way. And the emotion comes from something real. People yeah. not wanting to be governed by other people that can't be held accountable.
Right.
And other things, and other things, way, immigration and everything else.
By the way, and that applies to Obamacare.
Yes,
I want to be able. I don't want an unelected bureaucrat to somehow be controlling my health care. And it's the same thing with Brexit. If you look at it,
right.
That is, we don't want unelected bureaucrats, or we don't want our country to make a deal that says 10 years down the road, we don't get to vote on something, and the people who run the EU, the bureaucrats mm-hmm. who aren't elected by us and not. You know, even are not our elected representatives, then get to make decisions for our country. Sort of the same thing on a yeah. on a bigger level,
right.
macro and micro. But.
Right, right. And that's, you know, that I can't imagine where this thing winds up, because if you walked into a pub and shouted in, you know, Great Britain right now and shouted Brexit, you either might drink free for the next 2 hours or might be in the hospital for the next 2 days.
Probably
because the opinions are all over the place.
Yeah, probably in downtown London, you probably wouldn't say,
"Make Brexit free. Great again." Don't wear that yeah. hat. Don't wear that hat in exactly. downtown London.
Also coming up here in the show, I just love this headline. William Barr says, as Attorney General, he will not cave to pressure from Trump.
All right.
Well, what did you expect him to say?
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Yeah. I'm going to totally cave to pressure.
There's no other answer to give.
I can't wait to cave.
That was like a headline splashed all over the place.
I was looking forward to caving.
On the evidence of Trump-Russia collusion, for those of you on the left, and we do hear from you, not as much as we used to. But when we have said before, look, there's no evidence, we've gotten the occasional, just wait till they get him, just wait till they get him. We said, well, again, you may know something we don't know. If you have the evidence, please bring it forward. Oh, on The View yesterday, Jonathan Carl from ABC News was on there and actually said there is zero evidence of collusion. Zero, zero evidence of collusion to hack the election, to be involved with any of the Facebook stuff. And they didn't look too happy on The View.
Yeah.
Maybe except Meghan McCain might have looked a little bit happy. But they didn't look pleased at all and just wanted to move on from that particular point.
Yeah, let's move on. Yeah.
As we've said all along, we've looked at this as investigators. Well, your political partisanship. Well, no. Well, then tell us what there is. We can define and tell you what the evidence is of collusion. We can state it for you. You can't refute it as not being fact.
Right.
As if you're looking for collusion, you can find it in the Hillary Clinton campaign and the DNC funneling the money to the former British spy who got false information from the Russians in order to destroy Donald Trump's campaign. And then when they couldn't do it, an attempt to destroy the legitimacy of a legitimate presidential election.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty much how it went down.
Yeah. And we can go through it for anybody who wishes us to go through it, because we've gone through it hundreds of times. Also coming up here, Hillary, Susan Wright, and Ben Rhodes have to answer questions on Benghazi.
Mm.
Not to the Republicans,
mm-hmm.
but to Judicial Watch.
Yep.
I love it. And all the polling, see, a couple of polls out there today about how much time people spend on their phones and in front of screens. Half of our lives we spend in, half of our waking hours we spend in front of our screens. Well, duh.
Well, yeah.
For us, yeah. I mean, I'm 5 hours right here.
Plus, who wants to look at people?
Well, but that's, you know, it might have been something 20 years ago if you said that. But now everything is on your screen. TV's on your TV is on your screen. Books are on your screen.
Mm-hmm.
College courses are on your screen. High school courses are on your screen.
Well, it's like something, you know, let's go back, you know, 30 years, 40 years. students in school spend 5 hours a day looking at books. Okay. And?
Another duh.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of those. By the way, here's what I'm wondering. Do you still get money, government money, for doing silly studies?
Yes, yes, yes.
Good. How much do you get? That's what I want to know.
$1 million.
I'm on. I'm on board. I'm going to do one.
So that and more on the way.
Yeah, I just think it's ridiculous. You know, the back and forth, with the whole shutdown thing, the president saying again, essentially, well, nothing's really going to happen. They're calling back IRS workers, so, you know, he's not going to budge. Here's my question. What's the next big thing to hit? It would have to be TSA. If you're not getting a paycheck at TSA.
Well, it has to be TSA or it has to be the air traffic controllers.
Right, or a combination, I guess, of both.
Of both, yeah.
Yeah.
We'll get to that and more coming up and ask, is there any strategy? 866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. You know what I hate?
What's that?
I don't know if I hate it, because I really don't hate anything. You know what I dislike? The dumb debates that we have.
Yeah, on this show? Yeah, I really dislike
well,
them as
well. Because it's a legit political debate, but a debate of what's actually happening, it isn't. I just got another email, and this just somebody blaming, you know, it's Trump's fault. It's not the Democrats' fault. Trump is the one who can. And then it's, you know, we got a few of those calls and you know, yesterday. No, it's the Democrats' fault. It's well, coming up following the bottom of the hour, we'll tell you whose fault it is. We've already done this once about a week ago.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
nobody debated it.
Right.
But when we said it, nobody disagreed with us when we said it. But we get into these tunnel vision arguments that mean nothing. We're still in this dumb argument of, well, the money is there. It's not a money issue. We seem to get into debates and want to promote an argument that isn't the heart of the matter at hand.
Right.
It always frustrates me.
Yeah, I mean, we really do jump off on, you know, get off of the rails and go on to these, you know, side roads that don't matter. They don't go anywhere. They never go anywhere. And then they just turn in. And watching them on social media used to be exhausting. Now it's just, okay, I got to go. It's just watching them. It's, you know, because the points being made have nothing to do with the original discussion. They go so far off the rails. For Cobra Electronics, here's your forecast.
Showers continue today on the West Coast, and those showers will become snow flurries when you get into the upper elevations of the Sierras and Cascades in the West. From Seattle down through Olympia, portions of Sacramento into Los Angeles and San Diego, the entire I-5 corridor are under the threat of rain showers today. And again, as you move eastward, into portions of I-80 and I-90 near Spokane and over to Salt Lake City, you will encounter snow and or mixed precip. That same scenario, only more intense, will be set up for tomorrow. So another round, at least 24 hours of continued showers and snow for the West. Mainly clear for the central U.S., some icing for portions of central Ohio. Tomorrow, Thursday, look for more showers in the south with a developing storm system for the Midwest. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
They've well-deservedly been called every name in the book, and even some that aren't. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. I just wanted to get to this, and we had addressed this about a week ago, and I want to do it again because it just keeps building up again, and people have useless discussions, and they worry about useless things. Mm-hmm. And I just got another email, and it was just a guy, a long email. It's Trump's fault, and it's Trump's fault, and it's Trump's fault. And we had yesterday talked about the whole political thing of it, you know, the whole... And there's the politics of it that both sides are trying to blame, because who will the American public blame for it?
Right.
That doesn't mean it's the truth. You want to know the truth? Who's to blame for it? Both sides. There's a political disagreement. One side believes in border security. The other side believes in open borders.
There you have a standoff.
There you go. There's a standoff. That's why both sides are responsible. And so instead of trying to figure out who to blame, argue the issue. I'm just so sick and tired, Eric, of people just debating the stuff that doesn't matter.
Because it goes nowhere.
All of our debate should be focused on the issue at hand. Forget about it. It's both sides' fault. That's what happens in a republic, when you have a disagreement. One side believes in open borders. The other side believes in border security. Debate that point. Get out of the useless discussions of, well, let's discuss whose fault it is. Well, he said this at this point. He said it at that point. He said it at that point. And, yeah, we even get into it a little bit because somebody brought up and said, it can't be Trump's fault. We said, well, it's tough when you're talking about the marketing of something when you take the blame before there's even a shutdown. But, again, that's part of the politics of it, the reality of it in the real world of government and politics. In the real world, it's both sides' fault because there's an impasse. One side believes in open borders. The other side believes in border security. Talk about the nuances, and you can get into the different areas of border security and open borders. And you can ask people to defend their particular position on both. But get out of the debate and the minutia of the debate.
Well, or just playing the blame game. Look, the blame game is played on Election Day. That's where the payoff is. If there's some kind of political fallout, and we talk about that, we actually do analysis, real analysis on that, and we break it down. You know what's funny is that now at CNN and all the other websites, instead of opinion, they're using the word analysis. We do opinion, and then we make it clear when we're putting our political hats on and doing analysis. Mm-hmm. But the whole breakdown of where the political fault will lie happens on Election Day, happens in the polls, popularity polls. Saying is to is not doesn't go anywhere.
Right. Debate the issue at hand. The one issue is it worth it to have a partial shutdown for a few weeks? And you can talk about, as we have talked about before, what we feel is the failure of the Republicans over the last 15 years and the administration over the last 2 years to sell the issue at hand and not get caught up in side issues, which they did, Mexico paying for it.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about border security versus where they are, which is open borders. And as we've said, if you're listening for the first time, we want to make sure that we make it clear for you when you say, they're not for open borders. They say they're for border security. You can't be for border security if you believe in sanctuary cities. And the official policy of the Democrat Party, look at all the major cities across the nation that are Democrat, and they are all sanctuary cities, which is if you cross the border, you should be able to stay. Followed up by what? Illegal immigrants should be able to vote in local elections because they live here and should be part of the process. You have just given any person from anywhere around the world the greatest incentive to come here, because what you're telling them is a major political party that controls the majority of the major cities across this country and still the biggest state will protect you as an illegal immigrant, even if you're an illegal immigrant criminal. And the fact that, as Stacey Abrams said the other day, that video went all over the place, she believes illegal immigrants should be able to vote in elections. Well, then fine. Defend open borders then. Have the debate. Say, go to the American people and say, we believe open borders is the right way to go. By the way, some libertarians do it. Didn't Stossel do it at one time?
He did.
I haven't heard him say it in a while. I
haven't heard him talk about it in the last, 2 years.
Stossel's used to debate open borders. He said, I'm for open borders. He's a libertarian.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, then defend the open borders. Don't pretend you're something that you're not.
Don't say you're for border control.
Right, because they're not. And that's what the debate, if you want to know the truth and get away from the politics, what is the issue about? You've got this shutdown because one side believes in border security, and one side has said for most of all of our entire lives, we have not addressed this issue. This is what the one side is saying. Mm-hmm. Take away the politicians involved in it. We've got to do something on it. And the other side is saying open borders is the solution. Accepting anybody who crosses the border into this country is a humane and the correct way to do it. And so we should open the borders to anybody who gets across. And if a wall will inhibit people from getting across, that is immoral. That's their side. It's what they believe. It's why we have this partial shutdown right now. Don't worry about what they're trying to blame. Simply tell them this is what's going on.
Those are the two sides.
By the way, that's why I think Trump originally said, I'm happy to take the blame.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I'll take the blame for the shutdown. I believe it's worth it.
Get it off the table. Now let's talk about the actual issue.
Right.
Great.
Now, in the political realm, it might have not been the right thing because of what you're dealing. I would have said it in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
I would have been marketing for the last 2 years, as we have stated, mm-hmm. the fact that the other side is for open borders and we're not. Right. I wouldn't really. The last thing I want to do is shut down the government. But and Trump could say it, for my entire life, we have not dealt with the problem. We have not dealt with border security. It's why I was elected. I don't want a shutdown. Nobody wants a shutdown. But the Democrats want open borders. Force them into a debate corner where they have to answer to that. And when they say we're not for open borders, say, fine, what's your level of border security? Give me your plan. Perfect example was O'Rourke yesterday. Robert Francis O'Rourke
mm-hmm.
was out there talking about, why the wall is immoral. But it said, as the article noted, but he gave no details about what he would do on his, himself. Well, that's what they do. They attack you, but don't tell you what they would do with border security because they can't, because they're for open borders.
He's not only from a border state, he's from a border town.
Yeah.
And by the way, one of the most violent parts of Mexico in recent years. In terms of border towns.
So, to me, it's like, stop worrying about the minutia and the sideshow aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
Worry about the issue at hand. Tell people what you believe and be straight, be blunt. Identify your political opposition and the opinions that they hold. And dare them, as I have said before, dare them to call you a liar. You're for open borders. No, we're not. Then you tell me what you want. Tell me what level of border security you want. You can't be for sanctuary cities. You cannot be for the mindset that anybody who crosses the border should be able to stay because that's the ultimate incentive. You can't be for border security. You are for open borders. If you say if you get across, you should be able to stay, you should be able to get welfare benefits, you should be able to get complete medical benefits, and you should be able to vote. The Democrats say that every day, and the Republicans don't call them on it.
Well, and the other thing that the American people have to know, and this has to be repeated, we're at that crossroads. It's either going to happen now or it's not going to happen in our lifetime.
No, it won't. I agree with that.
Because you're at the point now where you've got New York City saying, no, we're going to pay for their health care. You have
California trying to come up with a way
to do it. The new governor of California is saying, we're going to look into doing that as well as a state. So we're at that crossroads. Decide which road you want to go down. And as a nation, we have to do just that. Because it cannot be a half measure. Either open the borders or put a wall up. Because the status quo isn't working. You know why? Because the open border side is actually winning. But make them own it.
Make them own it.
It's about as blatant as can be anyway when they're talking about giving them health care, but you still have to point it out in your debate point.
You have to point it out every single day, and the president doesn't, the administration doesn't, and the Republicans don't. And I'm sick and tired of hearing, but they've got the media on their side, which is why you have to do it and why you have to promote it and why you have to market it. Don't whine and complain about what is a given, and that's the other side is going to use whatever they can against you. You need to be better at your debate points. You need to be better at your marketing, because you can win the actual argument, as you've seen over the last year. We have seen there's been a change when it comes to border security from the people of the United States. And the Republicans and the president really haven't marketed in the correct way at all over the last 2 years for the president, the last 15 years at least for the Republicans. They have failed miserably.
Yeah, right.
But let's just stop on the side issues and get to the issue at hand. The debate and the shutdown, hey, it's because we believe in border security. We believe that there should be a process of legal immigration in this country. The other side believes in open borders and rewarding illegal immigrants who are able to get across the border with U.S. taxpayer dollars through welfare, through health care, and to the point where they do not want to cooperate with federal authorities to remove illegal immigrants from this country, and also they wish to hide illegal immigrant criminals from the federal government. And they wish illegal immigrants to vote.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you hear it on this show every day, because it's just every day we go by, and I'm like, they're still not arguing it right. They're still not debating it right. Debate the actual substance of the issue. Eric, what is it? What is the mental block in Republicans and in the administration not to be able to do this?
I don't know. I have no idea.
It's almost like there's
I would call for a town hall and say, we want two from each side. Two from each side. The president and Ted Cruz, Nancy, and Chuck.
But Ted Cruz was on the other day with his video. It was all over with his El Chapo thing, where the money is there. It's not about the money, Ted.
No, it's not.
And he knows that. Shave this facial hair, for God's sakes. It looks stupid on you. Maybe that got too personal?
Maybe.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe.
It was the whole Gillette thing. All right, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio, 866-90-RED-EYE. Yeah, so the quick point that I want to make, and I could have done it quicker, but it's not who's to blame for the debate. It's why the debate is happening. It's why there's a shutdown.
Nancy, that's why.
and
I'm not putting blame on anyone. I'm just saying Nancy.
The why is the substance of the actual issue,
yeah,
which is one side wants border security, the other side does not. By the way, the El Chapo plan is where you would take, you know, the drug assets and everything else from
that are confiscated.
Right, that are confiscated and use it. And Ted Cruz has been all over Facebook selling this and all over social media the last couple of days. And I'm just screaming, going, it's not about money. Stop it. Get to the issue. Why isn't Ted Cruz saying those people want open borders? Right. Why aren't they saying that every single day, Eric?
Yeah. Well, and that's, by the way, still not having Mexico pay for it because they get all their money from the users in America. So it's the drug people, the people using the drugs that buy it in the States. That's where their money comes from. I was watching, there's a documentary, a short limited series on Netflix, Inside the Real Narcos, and a British Special Forces guy who's done Afghanistan raids, the Taliban and everything else, and their drug processing, goes inside the cartels in Mexico, Colombia, and Peru. And I'm telling you, it's about as scary as it gets.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Thanks so much for being here this morning. I'm done. After that last segment, I can go home now.
No, I think we're obligated to stay for the rest of the show. Yeah, I think so. I don't know. What do I know?
See, if we weren't doing a radio show, if it was just a podcast.
Right. Oh, no, we could end it when we want.
You're just
and go home.
Rant and go home.
Does that ever happen on a podcast? Hey, I'm done talking to the guest. I got to go. May have to try that on my new podcast, The Extra Mile, with yours truly. And by the way, it's not really an extra mile. I don't do anything extra. Let's just face the facts.
Maybe because we do this for a living, our beef is different than other people's.
Mine's grass-fed.
When we start talking about, you know, how frustrating it is, and maybe when you're doing this, for me now, almost half my life, I've been doing just talk radio, and it's all about forming your, at least for us it is. Maybe for others it's not. I'm not going to judge what others do, but I know for us it's the substance of the actual argument that is imperative to us, because that's where you eventually win hearts and minds. We understand that there is a political element of it, but I've always believed one of the biggest failures of the conservative movement, which is why I've been drawn, you know, you and I both have been drawn to people that can communicate the message of substance and be entertaining at the same time. I'll give you an example. The you and I can go all the way back to the late Milton Friedman, when he used to be on Donahue. How, you know, even as a college student and out of college a couple of years, how attracted I was to him, because he made it simple, but he was talking the actual substance of the issues where you went, oh, okay, it's so clear, you win. You win the argument. There weren't side issues. And now, and I don't know whether it's social media, Eric, but it seems like more than ever, everybody is on a different tangent. Nobody is on the actual path to debating the issue at hand, including the people that we pay to argue the issues against the other side.
Right.
And to me, that is the most frustrating thing, because when you know how many, if you've been listening to the show for any length of time, you know how many times we've said it. It's never been easier in my lifetime to argue conservative principles and win every single time. Every single time. Where you convert people. I know wherever, I'm Eric, wherever I go, people that I talk, especially people that aren't part of the political process, but most of them that I meet believe that they're liberal, talk to them for 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Get them, you know, sit there and go, well, you know, this is it. Oh, yeah, okay, that is it. Yeah, this. I can't believe how many people that I come across who think they're liberal, and at the end of the day, they realize they're much more conservative. And when you actually bring out the facts of how things run, you can convert them.
Well, and on the issues, this is why I think it's so important. We talk about a number of issues, but for this particular issue,
it's so simple.
It's, well, the people are in the president's corner. On border control,
yeah,
the people agree with Trump. Introduce his name into the poll and things start to change. And yes, introduce the wall into the poll and things start to change. But talking about, you know, something we touched on a couple of weeks ago, and that is, all right, but why does it change? On immigration, the majority of Americans are for border control. Those numbers drop when you talk about a wall. Why? Well, the support for the wall has actually grown.
Trump.
And this is what we talk about in the frustration of not starting when you had that energy. And that whole discussion about it. Very simple discussion. Not many moving parts here. Border control or no? And then ask the Border Patrol, what is it that they need? Well, they say that they need a wall, especially in certain areas. They need a wall.
Right. And everybody understands the fact that when you give anybody an incentive to come over here, mm-hmm, you are going to have people that wish to take advantage of that. So
yes,
when you say, all illegal immigrants get welfare, come here, you get welfare. Come here now, as you see the state of California and New York, right in the middle of this debate.
Yes.
They're saying, okay, they get, you know, they get health care. We wish them, for all of them, to get health care. We see it in New York City. We see it in California with Gavin Newsom being elected, that they get welfare, that they get health care. And now the growing mindset of the Democrat Party, where they now get also voting rights.
Yeah.
And this is what, and so once you do, the average person, I don't care whether they've been voting Democrat their whole life, I'm not talking about the party, I'm talking about people. You sit them down and you explain exactly what's going on. You accuse the members of the Democrat Party of doing exactly what they're doing, mm-hmm, and you do it every single day, and you can convert people. You may not be able to convert, you're not going to convert everybody, but you don't need to. To win the debate, all you need to do, as we have always said, is convince 10 to 20% of the undecided out there that exist. And you do that by clearly lining out what the Democrats themselves are promoting that they support.
Yeah.
It's your job to connect. If you're the political opposition, the Republicans, it's your job to connect the dots. It's not hard. With the two idiots overnight, if we can figure it out, so can they.
Mm-hmm.
They've got hundreds of millions of dollars. And if they ran the campaign right, and if they ran fundraising right, and said, here's what we're going to do with the money, we're going to explain to people, we're going to be running television ads by the millions and talking about this is what the Democrat Party is about. You play their audio cuts over and over and over and over again. You play the hypocrisy line. You play the open borders line. You play the sanctuary cities line. You play the voting line. You play the welfare line. You play you pay the health care line. You lay out what the Democrats and the left in this country wish to do, and you ask, is this what you, the American public, want? And as Trump has said, been clear about it, as he was with Jim Acosta, that was completely lost in that conversation where he said, we want legal immigrants to come here
right.
from all nations because we're going to have a ton of jobs for them to do.
Well, and that's...
You win the debate with the majority of Americans. That is always your goal, to win the debate, to win the consensus, because that's how you move things in a democratic republic.
Well, and you know, the whole trip to McAllen, I really feel like that was a wash. I really feel like that just did not make the impact at all. But imagine coming out in January of 2017. Okay, February. All right, we'll give them a couple of months to settle in. March of 2017. And starting with that kind of campaign, this is what I talk about when I talk about a wall. Let's get these guys up here, the head of the Border Patrol, the people that are on the ground doing the work. Let's hear from them. Because if they say they don't want a wall and it won't work, then great.
Here, let's bring in the DEA. What is the problem? Let's bring in the professionals. Director of Homeland Security, come on in. What are the actual numbers? Have them stated from their figures. You don't need to state anything. You can state afterwards, these are the figures that we got from the Department of Homeland Security, from the DEA, from the FBI, from the Border Patrol, from Customs.
Yeah.
And you market it, you, as we said all along, with town hall meetings at border cities, and you explain to the American public, because remember, the American public cannot tell you what the three branches of government are, right, for whatever reason, mm-hmm, whether they're too busy trying to earn a living for their families, whether they wish to be willfully ignorant. I don't care what the reason is. I don't care what the reason is that the majority of Americans can't tell you the freedoms in the First Amendment, which means the majority of Americans don't understand the Constitution. If you explain it to them and you can do it simply, you can win all the arguments, because when it comes down to it, when you explain the Constitution to most Americans, they like it. When you explain why you want border security, when you explain that the opposition wants open borders, you win that argument with the majority of Americans every time. But it's not done by tweeting.
No.
And it's not done, Republican Party, over the last 15 years by being wimps and not going to the heart of the matter and not every day challenging and backing your political opposition into the corner. So they've got to strike out and say, no, you're a liar. I'm not for open borders. Then fine. Tell me what level of border security, as Eric, you said from the very beginning, tell us what level of border security you want and tell us precisely what your comprehensive immigration reform would do. And if it includes sanctuary cities, as your party supports right now, if it supports, as your party does right now, illegal immigrants voting, getting welfare, getting health care, then you are giving them the greatest incentive. You are for open borders. I challenge you. You say you're not. I say you are. American public, you tell me who's right. This is what they want for illegal immigrants in this country. Here's what I want. I want legal immigrants. I feel it's unfair to those waiting in line. You tell me who's right, the Democrats or me. Challenge the Democrats. Challenge the American people.
And put it before them, because you're going to force that other side to promote what they want.
Well, during this entire thing, during this entire shutdown, is when New York City's come out and said, oh, free health care. Free health care for illegal immigrants.
You have more material for your side than ever before. It's like they're calling your office going, oh, this is something else you should promote against us.
It's like the Patriots are playing the Bills every day.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Because one side has nothing, and the other side has quite a bit.
No, it's the Patriots playing the Bills every day. By the way, I'm a Bills fan, so I can say this. And Belichick going, nah, get Brady out of there. That's what it's like.
Yes.
Nah, Brady's not going to play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we won't. No, we're not going to. We're not going to throw the ball or run it. So what's the plan, Coach?
We're gonna kneel down.
Yeah, that's right.
We're gonna kneel down from the first quarter on.
That's right.
If you wonder why we get frustrated, that's why.
Mm-hmm.
It's that simple. That's where the frustration comes from. Us. We're not angry. We're frustrated.
I'm angry.
Well, I'm not angry. I'm frustrated because it's so easy.
And I'm frustratingly angry.
And the Republicans blow it every time. And if you can't get the simple messaging of border security versus open borders, and you can't present it to the American people in a consistent and coherent manner, then you can't do anything.
Well, it's not going to go anywhere. Expect nothing to change, except for the fact that the other side's going to win because they're going to keep handing out free health care, and they're going to keep expanding sanctuary policy. Mm-hmm. They're doing it right now. They're handing you their playbook to use against them every day.
As I said to you, last week, you weren't here when I had the one call. But we had said, look, we've never got anybody to try to debate it with us. Last Thursday morning, or last Friday morning, I did. I got one person.
Mm-hmm.
And I explained to him, well, it doesn't mean they're for open borders. I go, yeah, it does, because it's the ultimate incentive. No, it doesn't. Yes, it does. No, it doesn't. Okay, fine. We've ended it there. We've laid our position. I believe the audience would agree with me, and the vast majority would. I believe I win. Thank you very much. Because he was just stating, no, it's not. Well, of course it is. When you're saying, when you give that ultimate incentive that you can stay once you cross the border, that is open borders.
Well,
you
believe in the philosophy of open borders. Tell me what their policy is.
Yeah.
Tell me what their border control policy is.
So I've had, in all these years, we finally had one guy who tried, failed miserably, but at least he tried.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody else will even try because they know it's a slam dunk argument. Even the left knows it's an argument they can't win, which is why Nancy Pelosi, the New York Times had the article last week. Democrats are told not to talk about the actual issue of border security because they can't win it.
They're not going to win it with the rank and file.
Can't win it.
It's as we've been saying. The New York Times agrees with Eric and Gary. The rank and file don't want what the Democrats are serving up. And they side with the president. That's essentially what that was all about.
Yeah.
Otherwise, she would be free to come out and talk about it.
The New York Times doesn't agree with us. The New York Times reported that Democrats agree with us.
Mm-hmm.
They may not agree with us on that.
Well, fair enough. I'll walk it back to that point. From the New York Times.
From the New York Times.
Even
right.
The New York Times pointed out that we're
yes.
right.
Yes. 866 That's good. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Tips from J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated on DOT drug and alcohol testing. Truck drivers involved in certain crashes are required to undergo DOT post-accident tests for the presence of alcohol and/or drugs. Testing is required when the accident involves a fatality, injuries requiring immediate treatment away from the scene as well as a traffic citation for the truck driver, or a towed vehicle when a citation is issued to the truck driver. DOT rules state that as soon as possible following an accident, your employer must test for alcohol and drugs. Drivers must be tested for alcohol within 8 hours and tested for drugs within 32 hours of an accident. Remember, not submitting to a test or not being available for one within the required hours will qualify as a refusal to test, which has the same consequences as a positive test, and your employer must then remove you from the road. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Okay. coming up here, a couple of other things, IRS agents to be called back from their furlough. We'll get to that. Senator Mark Warner's op-ed piece. in the Wall Street Journal. We got to get to that because
yeah.
here I've been in business too, and to negotiate you need it's like oh man.
Okay.
Well, sorry, your premise is wrong, majorly wrong. So we will get to also. And on the evidence of a Trump Russia collusion, we'll play some audio from The View.
What?
Let's see what's going on with The View.
Okay. Why not?
Because it got a little interesting because they were very, very quiet. Jonathan Carl from ABC was on there, and they were asking him, well, there's zero evidence of any type of collusion with Russia to hack or change the outcome of the election.
Right. There's nothing there.
Right.
You know, it's funny because you've had other reporters doing analysis saying, yeah, it'll probably be just a report. Mueller wagging his finger. Because they can't find anything. They haven't identified a crime.
Never follow the company code of conduct. In fact, it follows them. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. We're just chuckling because we were going through a couple of other things and realize we're talking about that when Mueller released the report, you know, what would happen at that particular time. You know, that the report that Mueller gives out only goes to the attorney general. And then the attorney general releases what he thinks is appropriate to Congress. But it stays inside the Justice Department. The attorney general just releases it. And so the attorney general might be called to testify before Congress. Apparently, Mueller would not. The attorney general might. But then he would just disclose what he feels he should disclose.
Well, that's got to hurt because the Democrats have been and the Justice Department has been, you know, blocking the Republicans up until recently on the oversight committees and trying to get all these documents. Sorry, it will disclose methods and assets in the field. And we don't want to do that. And so you can see where. So Mueller comes back with a report. It really goes nowhere. There's no indictment coming from the report. It's just a report. Even Chris Cillizza at CNN, I don't know that he's changed his mind in the last few weeks, but has been saying that he believes it's just going to be a report, that there really won't be any big indictments that are going to come down.
Well, we were chuckling because it was like, well, then he would, because I was reading something from October, you know, he would give it to Rosenstein. Oh, no, wait a minute. Whitaker. Well, no, wait a minute. And we just started going,
right.
Who knows who's going to be attorney general by the time that Mueller is done? And that's why we were chuckling as we were coming back into that segment. So
and you could so then you could see the AG before the Senate Judiciary Committee, and they would be asking him questions. I mean, if they even call him, but if they do, the AG doesn't have to release everything from that report.
No, because as we have been told over and over and over and over again, and then from the 1999 Justice Department edict, they didn't want what had happened before, and so what they said was, what they said at that time, and this is the policy now, is that a special prosecutor is supposed to indict or not indict.
Right.
Criminal investigations are supposed to indict and not indict. You don't go with the criminal investigation out to the public and say, here's all the evidence that we have here, because what they said was they believe that was a flaw previous, because then when people say, well, you didn't overturn this stone and that stone and that stone, that you either indict or you don't indict. Either you have the evidence or you don't have the evidence. And if you don't have the evidence, you don't go through the investigation with the public for people who did not commit crimes.
Right.
And so that's where they are right now. And that was approved way back in 1999 is when the Justice Department came out with that. So that's not going to change anytime soon. But when we look here, do I still have that? I said, yes, I do have it here. Hmm. I want to play this audio here, and this is from the View.
The missing link.
I'm sorry here. That went out by accident. Hmm. I didn't mean that to happen. Right. This is from the View, and Jonathan Curl from ABC was on it. And that's because last couple of weeks when we have said, look, there's nothing there. And we've told you in the past that we don't hear from liberals much anymore. We used to, but we don't much anymore. Mm-hmm. And we believe one of the reasons is we do when if they believe we've only covered 99% of an argument, if they believe there's a sliver of 1%, they will call us on it.
Sure.
And so, or they will just throw on a general accusation. And if you've listened to the show, we have said over the last 2 years, and we said it again yesterday, that over the last 2 years, we still don't know what the actual behavior of Trump that they were looking into was, what the specific behavior of collusion is. And as we have stated, they have much more on the Democrats and the Hillary campaign of colluding with the Russians to change the outcome of the election and then using that information to attempt to delegitimize the presidential election of 2016. Mm-hmm. And we can tell you what that precise behavior is. We can tell you, and nobody debates it, that the Hillary campaign and the DNC funneled money to a law firm, Perkins Coie, who funneled that money to an opposition research organization, Fusion GPS, which then funneled money to the former British spy, Christopher Steele, a foreign national, and that's where a campaign finance violation is most likely would be in that particular case. And he says he went to the Russians and the Kremlin to get information that was never verified. And as Michael Isakoff last week, or a couple of weeks, it was about a month ago now, said he believes is false information, get false information, much of it salacious, and I guess you could call it treasonous against Trump that was false, in order to destroy his campaign, and then when they couldn't do that, destroy the legitimacy of the 2016 election. You can't debate the actual behavior that we know happened in those particular cases. And then we're talking about the behavior of the FBI, the political prejudice and hatred of the president. We talked about the New York Times article the other day, which they thought would make Trump look worse, and the left jumped on it. And when you actually read it again, it wasn't a bombshell against Trump. It was a bombshell against the FBI, because it showed that the FBI didn't like the fact that Trump fired Comey. So they decided, we're going to have a counterintelligence investigation to see whether he committed treason for firing our boss. With no evidence. Nobody can provide what that evidence was except for the dossier, that evidence of the dossier that was used to get the warrant to spy on the Trump campaign, which now, as Andrew McCarthy said, was even clarified now, and you get closer to the fact that they were never going after Carter Page and were never going after George Papadopoulos. As we always said, why would they be going after them? It was their in to get into the campaign to attempt to get Trump. That Trump was always their target. And anything that they could use to try to legitimize, or just be try to legitimize by saying, we've got our fishing line in the lake, and so maybe we'll catch something. To me, that's how I believe that they were justifying at that particular point. But what we found out from the New York Times article is that, no, what it did was actually put the FBI even in a worse light than they were before. So that's the point that we've said. And we'll have some people on the left call up and say, well, they're going to get him. Wait till you find out. You guys are going to look. They could get him for something else. We have no idea. We're talking about this issue here. We're talking about the original issue, which was Trump colluded with the Russians to hack the election. And then it became Trump colluded with the Russians to change the outcome of the election. And the only evidence that exists of any political party and any presidential candidate colluding with the Russians to change the outcome of the election was from the Hillary campaign and the Democratic National Committee. And as we've said, please, someone tell us where we're wrong on it. Nobody ever has, because you can't. And so what we'll get is, well, they're going to get Trump on something, but nobody can actually debate. As we have done, we, and if you followed us, we've said we've put on our investigative hats. Well, what is the actual crime? What is the actual evidence? And as we said even yesterday and the day before, assume that both sides are lying. Assume that Trump is lying, Hillary's lying, the FBI's lying, that everybody on both sides is lying. Where does the evidence lead you?
Well, what are the things that we know and are documented?
Yes, the evidence that we know of.
And what's the one thing that should be here, at least on the table right now, that isn't? A crime.
Or even some behavior, a specific act or behavior by the president that would, or by the candidate at that time, that would lead you to believe, and there is no, outside the dossier, there has not been anything that has been leaked or any evidence presented anywhere, or even forget about evidence, no accusation of a specific behavior by the president.
No.
Then candidate. And as investigators, that's how we looked at it without any investigative experience, unlike those with investigative experience who seem to look at it like politicians, James Comey.
Mm-hmm.
I want to play this here. This is from the View from yesterday here with Jonathan Carl as they talked about Trump and the investigation.
The missing link for me is, how do you go from hearing people on TV saying, oh, we've known he's been an agent the whole time, to literally the FBI then launching an investigation into a sitting president, looking into whether or not he's an agent for the Russians? How much evidence do you need for that? And then where does Mueller fit into all of this?
Well, this is, again, this is the FBI director, the acting FBI director at the time, Andrew McCabe. And I think what it shows, and we've seen through some of the text messages of some of the others involved in this decision, including Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, these were people that deeply detested Donald Trump. And now they're running the FBI, and they're able to open this counterintelligence investigation. And they, you know, they believe that they had solid reason. The president
Shouldn't
was acting in a way.
Shouldn't that make us all skeptical then?
I think that there are reasons to be skeptical. But I think the biggest one is what happened afterwards. And there is no indication that Robert Mueller picked up any of this. And here's a very important point. We are now just, I believe, weeks away from getting a final report from Robert Mueller. And there is so much anticipation, so much speculation about what he is going to show. He has been looking into, you know, this whole range of issues. And I am led to believe by people who have interacted with the special counsel that we should be prepared for him to release a report that is anticlimactic. Mm. That on the, you know, he's already done a lot. He's already gotten more than 30 indictments. Mm. The president's inner circle, right. His campaign chairman, convicted, his national security advisor, indicted, his personal lawyer. So much has already been there. But on the central question of did Donald Trump or anybody in his campaign coordinate or collude with the Russians in their effort to meddle in the 2016 campaign, we have seen zero evidence of that. And
there you go. And that comes from Jonathan Carl in ABC. So for those people that say you guys are just being Republican hacks, we are not.
No, the media and a number of them in the media have known this for a while. Otherwise, they would keep repeating the things the facts working against the president. What did he just point out there on the indictments?
Everything that was
not related at all to the
central goal and edict of the special counsel.
Right. Had nothing to do with the election and colluding with Russians to fix an election.
Right. And he said later on, and I didn't play the entire, later on he said, or any of the Facebook stuff, any of the social media stuff.
Right.
That nothing to hack the elections.
Nothing.
Nothing with the DNC. Nothing with the whole. Well, we knew there was nothing to do with the Facebook thing, but he made it clear anyway, just to cover his Jonathan Carl, to cover his bases. And I would say Jonathan Carl, I'm going to guess, is probably not one of the people that likes the president.
I'm guessing he's not a fan.
We're guessing there. All right. We just wanted to bring that forth to you and explain that here. especially after last Friday and the celebration of Democrats. And it's like, well, wait a minute. Did you actually read it? And if you read it, you went, well, there's nothing here. It makes the FBI look bad.
Yes.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carley. I'm Gary McNamara. I was just going through social media, and I saw this ad from Nike. Or not an ad, but a story. Ready for this?
All right.
Nike reveals self-lacing shoes, which can be controlled by a smartphone.
Finally. Man, I'm so sick of tying my shoes.
Seriously.
So maddening that I have to tie my shoes every day.
I don't want to tie my shoes. I want it done on my smartphone. Well, then are you really going to go out and exercise?
Yep.
Let's be honest.
Yeah, I am. It's like me sitting on the couch on the weekend at 3 a.m. New exercise DVD or whatever comes out. And I'm thinking, man, I'm totally going to order that. And then I realize I'm too lazy to get up and change the channel.
Because
the remote's way over there.
I will tell you, I mean, I've got these new basketball shoes because I still plan on playing this year. I'm going to get back out again when weather starts getting nicer again.
Mm-hmm.
But for me now, it's socks, it's the ankle braces, the soft ankle braces, not the hard one, because I don't want to blow up my knee.
Right.
It takes about 10 minutes to put your to put all your stuff on to go play basketball.
For me, it's all about pillows.
So I probably would be one of those, if a smartphone could do it, and it could do it and do all the pressure right, and, you know, they had the air shoes that it, you know, that sort of put all the pressure on, and you just do it on your smart. I'd do that, because that way I wouldn't have to bend over to actually lace it, because it hurts my back.
Well, then I need an Iron Man-like suit to basically run for me.
Yes.
I mean, if we can get to that, I'm good.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He's Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Always prepare for your show. Always, always prepare.
Okay. I will do that.
You need to always prepare for your show. Don't just wing it.
Well, you should know, you know, who's going to be on.
Yes. Yes.
Know something about your guest.
Not your guest. If you're going on somebody's show.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Especially if you're going to be a guest. Know who you're going to be on with.
And I want to play this little audio cut.
All right.
CNN's Areva Martin, who is a host of, or excuse me, who was a guest of talk show host David Webb on Sirius XM.
Mm-hmm.
And they got into the discussion of white privilege.
Okay.
And I'm just going to play it for you here, okay?
Okay.
Courtesy of Sirius XM.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't stop laughing yesterday. Being in radio as long as I've been in radio, to hear this, I mean, it is absolute radio gold. You ready?
No.
All right, here we go. All right.
I've chosen to cross different parts of the media world, done the work so that I'm qualified to be in each one. I never considered my color the issue. I considered my qualifications the issue.
Well, David, you know, that's a whole nother long conversation about white privilege and things that you have the privilege of doing that people of color don't have the privilege of.
How do I have the privilege of white privilege?
David, by virtue of being a white male, you have white privilege. This whole long conversation, I don't have time to get into.
Ariva, I hate to break it to you, but you should have been better prepped. I'm black.
Okay, then I stand.
See, you went to white privilege. This is the falsehood in this. You went immediately with an assumption. Your people, obviously, or you didn't look. You're talking to a black man.
They
who started out in rock radio in Boston, crossed the paths into hip-hop, rebuilding one of the greatest black stations in America, and went on to work for Fox News, where I'm told apparently blacks aren't supposed to work. But yet, you come with this assumption, and you go to white privilege. That's actually...
There you go. I mean, it's just, no. I mean, it's just beautiful.
Wouldn't you, if someone asked you to be on, and you don't know who they are, which clearly she did not, right? So if you don't,
right, you don't go.
You would say to yourself, well, okay, someone wants to have me on and have a discussion. Let me research this person just so you can kind of know where they stand. Forget about knowing what color they are. Okay, where does this person stand politically? Because it's clearly going to be a political discussion. So would you not at least Google it and find out something about the person?
Well, here's the difference, though. We wouldn't have to.
I wouldn't care.
Well, that's the whole point is, we're not. I'm not going to argue the color of the skin to begin with, so I don't need that argument. It's going to be on the substance of the ideas.
Wouldn't you want to know something about the person if you're going to have that discussion?
Well,
and it's going to get into the political side of it.
From my point,
forget about color.
From my point of view, from the misogynist, sexist part of me. Well, if it's a woman host, I would like to see if she's attractive or not to know whether I should be.
Your masculinity is toxic, sir.
Gary McNamara.
Toxic. To find out whether my approach should be more flirtatious, whether it's justified to be more flirtatious.
You need to shave. Your masculinity is toxic.
It's just great. We can cover like 10 topics all in one.
How dare you, sir? Show up to a debate with no razor.
Don't bring a razor to a knife fight.
That's right. Oh my gosh.
So much fun.
The weekend review from Red Eye Radio. And it's only Wednesday. Woo! Always a roller coaster, folks.
Can you
look? That's and
you know, it's so I shouldn't, but it's so bad. Maybe it's just because we've been in radio before, and if you've ever seen somebody in a uncomfortable... I was listening to the radio one time, and a guy was obviously drunk on the air. And I actually heard it. He got fired after it. But it was a Saturday morning DJ. And it was like, oh my, you can't believe it's happening. At the same time, you feel terrible for them because you know that their career is over.
Right.
That wasn't the case here. Her career isn't over.
Yeah.
But I did afterwards. I was like, oh, this is so bad. I mean, it's just so bad. Now, her most likely being on the left, it's not going to affect where she goes because you can make those kind of mistakes.
You can make
that accusation.
Right.
But the fact is, her first argument, and he made a great point, David made a great point, her first argument was white privilege. It wasn't you're wrong on the issue because of this. It was I can't argue with it because I'm not going to argue with it because you have white privilege, and therefore there can be no argument because your white privilege dictates you don't get a say.
Right.
Well,
you have no place at the table.
Doesn't work that way in the real world.
Right. And he clearly demonstrated with all of his work and his background that he, of course, has a place in the room. By the way, everybody has a place at the table.
Everybody does. Yes.
You only make it about that if you can't have the debate. You only turn to something like that when you have no point to debate on. You have nothing to stand on. So you move to that. And you expect some kind of a guilt trip, I guess, from the other side. Oh, wait, you just assumed something without knowing.
Oh, wow. But I did. There was just a twinge for a moment of sympathy going, oh, man, because it was just so bad.
I mean, would you not learn the very basic about who the person, why would I be on this person's show? This person is asking me to be on. Why would I be on?
Now, the only other time where I felt a little sorry for somebody, but I actually, one time a long time ago, and it was as the call was going on, I set up somebody on the air one time. I set up a caller.
Mm-hmm.
And we really, I mean, I did not intend to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But it goes way back when I was doing my local show. And the funny thing is, one of my best golfing buddies heard it. He was listening at that time. And this guy called me up, and we were talking about, it was, I can't remember what it was. It had to be 2000, maybe 2003, 2004, something going on with the whole Arab-Israeli thing, or the UN or something like that is what it was. It was something about the UN. And this guy called me up, and he said, well, I probably know more about the United Nations than, you know, than you do, or something like that. And I said, do you really? He goes, yeah, I think you do. And I don't remember specifically the conversation, but I started going back, and I just knew I knew at the moment where I started debating him that I was going to set him up. And I started going back to some of the different heads of the United Nations and what they had done. For example, I mentioned Utah, you know, way back, going back decades ago. And, you know, and we started going through, you know, different heads of the UN and the things that they had done right or wrong. And we agreed, and I purposely agreed with him. I think I brought up two of the different heads of the UN over a period of time. And then I asked him, I said, but then I said, a few years ago when Jar Jar Binks took over the United Nations, Jar Jar Binks, of course, the
fictional lizard-like
creature in
one of the Star Wars.
Star Wars, right, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, now, do you agree? I said, because I think that Jar Jar Binks did a great job as head of the UN. And the guy said, oh, yeah, I agree with you, too. I said, okay, maybe we agree on more than. And he said, yeah. I said, well, okay, well, then, look, thanks so much. We agreed more, but you do think that Jar Jar Binks was really one of the best ever. He goes, yeah, one of the best.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks so much. And I just went right into a commercial and didn't even laugh until I came. The phones just went nuts.
Yeah,
I never forget my buddy Jim calling me, leaving me the message. He said, that was genius. And it wasn't. It just came up to me. I don't, because I normally don't do that. I just don't get in the habit of trying to setting up a caller.
Mm-hmm.
But this guy was just something about his voice saying, I know so much more about you than about the United Nations than you know on your little. And I said, okay, all right, well, go ahead. Let's. And at that moment, I knew how I was going to set him up.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why, because I never thought, but it just came to me at that moment. And I felt sorry for the guy afterwards, because I came back out of the commercial break and the lines were lit. And I said, OK, folks, in case you don't.
This just in. Parliament has decided to give a vote of confidence to Jar Jar Binks in Great Britain.
That might be the solution for the whole Brexit thing.
Actually, just make up. Just have puppets. I mean, actual puppets. Just have puppets. Just have cartoon characters.
I don't know where they go.
I have
you
no
and I
idea
talk,
where
we started
they go.
Out the we didn't spend a lot of time on it, but we started saying that the analysis I was reading yesterday is nobody knows where to go with that whole thing now. That because the one suggestion that was out there that, okay, Parliament now, this is in Parliament's hand, and maybe Parliament now should call for a second referendum to clarify the first referendum. It's like, oh,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, right. Well, because it reeks of something that.
But when are they supposed to be out? Isn't it coming up? I mean, isn't the date approaching for them to be out?
Well, yeah. I mean, this was moving forward to invoke Article 50.
But was it March of? I mean, isn't there a Wasn't there a certain date?
Yeah, I don't know if it's March 1st. I don't know the date, but it's, yeah, it was soon. But what it reeks of is a, I think in part, a public that voted for something and didn't realize how difficult it was going to be. Or a public, you know, for whatever reason, there was a change of sentiment. Now, that's not the case with all of them.
Brexit formally takes effect March 29th.
Okay. I was thinking March 1st, but okay.
Yeah.
So now what do you do?
I don't know. Like I said, when you compare the shutdown here, anything, you know, people, you know, especially the opposition to Trump, mm-hmm. this nation, it's complete and total chaos. We're falling apart. Hold my beer.
Well, I mean,
is what Great Britain is saying.
When we talked about, okay, when the whole California seceding thing, all right, here's what it would take. Here's what it would take. Here's what it would take. By the way, we did this also when there was the brief discussion about this with Texas seceding. Remember that?
Yes.
Now, we could get by, and maybe California could get by, but not without a ton of chaos ahead of time. It's never going to happen. And here's what it would require. When we started having the actual discussion, well, it fell away. So my question is this. On the Brexit vote, did they hit the button and then realize, oh, crap, what did I do? I have to believe that's the case with a number of the voters. Believing, knowing that I think some at the core still are on board for the Brexit. But my question, what is the change? What changed and what would it be if you had that vote once again?
Well, I never for to get involved. To get involved. Number one, as well. We'll take a break and come back and talk more about it here. Coming up here, 866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. You know, even when the whole European Union, you know, started out, I mean, I was the thing that baffled me completely is why countries wanted to get into a union, a European Union together and share the same currency. Now, Great Britain was an exception there. Which then I stated, well, then why are you getting involved in this? Why not just have free trade agreements, you know, with the rest of Europe and every single country? Why would you give, in essence, because this was part of a Brexit, was giving over sovereignty. And sovereignty is not a free trade agreement. Giving up your sovereignty is when you give a group of bureaucrats, when you agree to give a group of bureaucrats who are not elected by your country say-so over the policies of your country.
Yeah.
And for the life of me, I didn't understand why countries were so eager to do it, because we knew that down the road, I think most people knew, whether it was 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, that there was going to be a problem with it, that finally there would be a revolt, because you eventually have a revolt in a country where people, when they get to the point where they feel that they are not being represented. And I don't mean where we live, because people say they're not being represented in this country. There's a difference between you thinking that the guy who you elect doesn't represent you, but you still go and vote, than the fact that you don't vote for somebody who, or a group of bureaucrats who live in another country who are making policy that affects your particular country. At that point, people look at that immediately, and you know just in politics in general that that's eventually going to come and bite you in the butt. Mm-hmm. It's just the way that things work out.
Mm-hmm.
But why any country would want to share their currency with a bunch of other countries that you cannot control a lot of their policies. It was always beyond me. And it was like when, remember the whole rumor, and you and I had to deal with that, and had to deal with a friend of mine. Remember the Amaro?
Mm-hmm.
With the think tank in Canada said, well, what do you think? And it was a conservative think tank. What if we should share? Should we have a North American union?
Right.
And should we have a currency for the United States, Canada, and Mexico? And so they, you know, came out with, they said, hey, we could share the currency, and they called it the Amaro, and the conspiracy theorists went nuts.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the think tank eventually came out and said, no, it wouldn't be a good idea.
Right. They were trying to make the point. They said, here, look at the experiment if we were to do it.
Right.
And it was an experimental discussion is what it was. And you look at the euro, and you look at the nations in the European in the eurozone that were and still are suffering. You're basically tied. Your currency is tied to theirs. Why would you want that long term? Why would you want your economy essentially tied to theirs? It's one thing to have them as a trade partner, but then to officially all jump in on the same boat. Well, eventually, they're going to poke a hole in that boat. And for Omnitrax, here's your forecast.
Showers continue today on the West Coast, and those showers will become snow flurries when you get into the upper elevations of the Sierras and Cascades in the West. From Seattle down through Olympia, portions of Sacramento into Los Angeles and San Diego, the entire I-5 corridor are under the threat of rain showers today. And again, as you move eastward into portions of I-80 and I-90 near Spokane and over to Salt Lake City, you will encounter snow and or mixed precip. That same scenario, only more intense, will be set up for tomorrow. So another round, at least 24 hours of continued showers and snow for the West. Mainly clear for the central U.S., some icing for portions of central Ohio. Tomorrow, Thursday, look for more showers in the south with a developing storm system for the Midwest. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Agent Provocateurs, Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Welcome good morning. Let's get to some of your calls and comments here on Brexit and the CNN reporter who got burned big time. Using white privilege, and the host had to tell her, I'm not white.
Yeah.
Let's go to Mike in Arkansas. Mike, hi, you're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Hey, Gary and Eric. Thanks for taking my call. If only Rachel Dolezal had been on the phone with her or him, that would have been even better.
Well, by the way, we will get to that point sometime where somebody will say, well, no, that may not be my skin color, but I identify as black or identify as white. That will happen. That will happen.
That's how I feel right now, you know? You know, in local terminology, Brexit's going to get to be a sticky wicket, don't you think?
Yeah, probably. It already is, actually.
And I don't know how much participation the United Kingdom has in Airbus. I don't think it's much. So they don't have a whole lot to lose from that. And they're their own country, and I think that's pretty much the way the British populace felt about it. The other thing that's going to come into consideration, though, is Ireland still wants to be in. And, you know, you got Northern Ireland up there, and that was going to be as far as their commerce between Northern and Big Ireland. And who knows with Scotland what's going to happen.
Well, look, I mean, these things always happen. I mean, these are things that are constantly happening, trade agreements, things like this. You know, the European Union, you're going to have more countries, that are considering whether it's advantageous from the BN. I mean, this is normal things that happen when you decide to enter something like that, and you take the gamble of creating a huge international bureaucracy that people then believe can rule and make rules and regulations that affect them, and they don't have a direct vote. I mean, that's normal.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, it's not shocking that any of this has happened.
No. It was going to be a mess regardless of how this thing came down. It was going to be a mess. And there was going to be that. I think, you know, right now what you have is the sky is falling mentality from the anti-Brexit side. And it is, you know, the world is going to end if this happens, yeah. If we let this happen.
But as to the effect on Airbus, and that's actually a pretty good thing to bring up, Airbus. I was reading an article yesterday about how they expect air travel worldwide to just go crazy between now and 2030.
Right.
Just around the world, the number of people that are going to be flying. And one of the reasons is because of the technology of making such fuel-efficient jets. And the discovery of lots of petroleum to make jet fuel.
Mm-hmm.
And but that really, when you look at the advances in technology of everything from airplane design to composite material to much, much more efficient jet engines, that it's going to skyrocket, which means what? Tons of business for Airbus and Boeing worldwide. There's manufacturing facilities of Airbus in Great Britain, but there's also manufacturing facilities in the United States. And even in China, for Airbus. So you don't have to be a member of the European Union to have a manufacturing plant.
Right.
They put the manufacturing plants where they feel, any company does, where it suits their purposes, to help either in, you know, being closer or more in tune with where they believe the supply chain is, or where they're going to sell the product.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. But when you see just where they will eventually get to. I mean, when you think of where they were and where they probably want to get to, which is to mostly have free trade agreements with every country in Europe, and you know, or be outside of the European Union and have free trade with the European Union, but still be self-governing, which they could have had to begin with. It's not really that difficult, but it's the evolution of where you are and the agreements that you make with the other parties, which then you want to change as you evolve along that particular line. For example, as you said, European Union's already said, well, the deal that we struck for you to get out is a deal the way it's going to stay. It's like, well, no, well, we want to, you know, do some other things here.
Well, and those are the options before right now Prime Minister May. She can go back and try and renegotiate and find something, a compromise that she could take back to Parliament that Parliament would agree to. Or they could do another vote.
Right. And, well, you know, and again, the European Union saying that they don't want to negotiate anymore. Everybody eventually will negotiate in some form or manner when it comes to free trade. Look, you see it over here in the United States. You see it in the United States. You see it with when the president said he was going to do all these things and equalize the, you know, the trade deficit. And we said, there's not. He's not going to do that. It's not going to happen. And when you see eventually what has come out, the new NAFTA as opposed to the old NAFTA, even though he sold it, things have gone quiet because the only thing he really tried to sell was the part that hurts the United States the most, which is raising the cost of building cars in the United States, Mexico, and Canada, which is going to make it harder to manufacture cars in Canada and sell them elsewhere, which was President Trump's goal to begin with.
Right.
But overall, and that'll get ironed out because they're going to review it every couple of years, and this one may not even get, it may be reviewed before it even passes as NAFTA. Because there's no talk about bringing that into Congress at this moment, is there? Do you hear any talk? I don't hear any talk about the fact that they need to discuss it. So, but when it comes down to it, the old NAFTA is basically 98% of the new NAFTA.
Mm-hmm.
And when they eventually, and they will, they'll get rid of the steel and automobile and aluminum tariffs. Those will end. And then with China being more, free trade. And you look at it because once in a while people say, well, look, Trump has made us isolationist. Not really. Not really. When you see isolationist, how? By demanding a different trade deals? Now, I will admit, part of the problem with the trade deals is he's been all over the place. He held every position on it. But now countries are trying to, like in every government, they've figured him out. He's going to be a free trader. He's basically going to be a free trader, try to get little victories here or there. But even in China, pushing more for free trade. Eventually, that's what comes out of all the free trade agreements. And in a modern society where you have supply chains that are like an octopus with a million tentacles, you can't control the world economy. Even if you're the United States, you don't get to do it. The president can't do it. Congress can't do it. All you do is hurt your own economy in the long run. And as we have seen, what the president promised in trade agreements is not the reality of what the new NAFTA is, except in a couple of circumstances, which actually will hurt American industry and he'll eventually have to drop. Or Congress will say we're not going to go forward with that.
Right. Yeah, I mean,
and in China, as you and I talked about, it looks right now what they're negotiating is looking really good.
Well, and that's it. You're not going to you can't put the toothpaste back into the tube on free trade. That's not going to happen. No president will ever be able to do that. And even his strongest supporters said, well, it's only a negotiating tactic anyway to get a better deal. Well, then our question was, okay, great. What's a better deal?
And nobody could ever define it.
No.
We never had one person
define what is fair trade.
What a better deal was.
Is fair trade?
No, just like what's fair in taxes. Right. Nobody can ever define what that is.
Right.
Except
you may have your own definition of what it is. The question is, what does the free market think that it is?
Right.
You may hate the fact that we buy too many things from China. You may hate the fact that we buy too many things from other parts of the world altogether. But the fact of the matter is we go out and we vote with our dollar every day. That's how people choose. To think that, well, we're just going to bring it all back here, that's a false notion. We can all have the same goal, to increase manufacturing in the States. But the reality is, if we brought it all back here, who would actually work those jobs? Look at manufacturing right now, and there's still short people. Labor-intensive jobs for Americans aren't really the future. They're not. We're talking about generations that don't want to do hands-on work.
Well, look, to the point where the president, you and I said, everybody missed it when he was arguing with Jim. Well, when Jim Acosta was arguing with him, because he really wasn't arguing with Jim Acosta.
No.
But he corrected Jim on the whole immigration. He goes, wait a minute, I'm not against legal immigration. In fact, we're going to need lots of legal immigration in order to fill the jobs of what the industry will be here in the country when it's booming.
Mm-hmm.
So the president's even brought that up. The president's even made the distinction between legal immigration and illegal immigration, and how legal immigration, because we don't, as you and I talked about before, it's something the country's going to have to address, because the country right now on legal immigration wishes to have a lot fewer immigrants coming into the country overall. That's what
right.
the polls show.
Right.
As we have stated, the country is going to have to eventually come to the realization that we're not going to have a baby boom anymore. Women by the tens of millions are not going to be coming into the workforce. Just like you need raw materials, if you are going to be if you're going to be a booming manufacturing, industrial, and business base, you need workers. And you saw how many workers we needed over the last 80 years in this country and where they came from, an unprecedented baby boom that will never happen again, ever. Yep. And the influx of women into the workforce post-World War II by the tens of millions. And that was really to get 3% growth over that. If you take that entire time of that 80 years, roughly 3% growth each and every year. Look at the amount of labor you needed. If the president's talking 4 or 5% growth, as he has said, don't think we'll ever reach an average of 5% growth. But if you did, you would have to bring in, either you bring in a ton of legal immigrant workers or companies are moving.
Right. Because automation isn't going to ramp up that quickly. It will keep on the same path it's going, even in fast food these days.
But you still need workers.
But you're going to have the humans in those jobs.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RUDDA. I wanted to get to this here because this was an op-ed piece by Senator Mark Warner.
Okay.
This is just so bogus. Here's how you make a deal, Mr. President. Free advice from one businessman turned politician to another.
Okay.
This is Democrat Senator Mark Warner.
Yeah, in the Wall Street Journal.
Yes. Donald Trump ran for president telling a story of business prowess, the author of The Art of the Deal. Would come to Washington and solve the problems that politicians couldn't. 2 years later, the longest government shutdown on record is revealing gaping holes in his facade. Like the president, I've spent more time in business than in politics. And goes on to talk about 20 years as an executive investor, did very well. As a governor and a senator, I relied on my business experience to get things done. Every day the shutdown drags on, it becomes clear the president never learned lessons that successful executives know by heart. All right? Mm-hmm. Here's his first one. And here's where you can stop. You don't need to go any further in the op-ed piece. Always try to find a solution in which both sides come out ahead. Mr. Trump has refused to compromise or negotiate.
Sorry. You just lost me.
Just lost you right there.
All your credibility is gone because that's absolutely
right.
False.
Completely false. I would say, Senator Warner, one of the first things in business is the first point that you make when you talk about negotiating should not be a lie.
Right. Well, the president has opened up a number of possibilities. First of all, we need to point out that right now he's not even asking for $25
billion. Right. You and I pointed that out how many times?
Mm-hmm.
Originally was $25 billion. He's asking for $5
Mm-hmm.
That's a negotiating tactic. He's not asking for everything.
Right. And by the way, what would be the compromise here when the new Speaker of the House has said multiple times, we're not giving him a dime for the wall?
Right. And that's the other point.
So what is he supposed to give in? See, this is the left for you. That's what the Democrats think. You give in. That's compromise. Give in to our side.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.